Blistering insight, well-researched fact, insightful comment. I'm afraid you've come to the wrong place. But welcome, because this is none other than the world-famous Leicester City Pubcast.
Greetings, Foxes fans, and welcome to another glorious episode of the double award-winning Leicester City podcast, live, as always, from the salubrious surroundings of the Foss Arms, where I'm once again in the chair, meaning that not only will we enjoy bumper listener numbers, but it's bumper triple XL table for two for myself and my excellent, amply bosomed psychic Norm, who, as we speak, has his snout in a packet of king-sized Trumpwell port rind, where the coincidence of him making the sound of a truffling pig should not be lost. Norm, good evening.
Very good evening, Killer. Yes, again, a rather fantastic introduction, which I'm most grateful for. Thank you.
Absolute pleasure. Now, listeners, on the Foss Arms menu this evening, for starter, we have a review of the last two games. For main course, we will look at the squad and speculate around the comings and goings, with a side portion of looking ahead to the Cardiff fixture. And for dessert, we will have the predictor table with a rich helping of our final thoughts. But thankfully, Norm has now finished lapping away at the salty sediments of his port rind. And Norm, where else can we start apart from Burton, which seems like an awful long time ago now, doesn't it?
It's so long ago that I've actually forgotten we played them. So. I'm sat here giggling too much at my introduction to even can even remember that game. But no, look, for once, I think it's just a game that actually kind of went as we would have expected it to, didn't it? It was always going to be a little bit of a challenge. Obviously, made lots of changes for the game, but you know, ultimately, I don't ever really think there was ever going to be any other winner than ourselves. So it was nice to be in the first round, as we alluded to last week, and another game under our belts, another opportunity to, you know, try some players out, and that kind of felt really what it is. And ultimately, I thought it was, you know, maybe a couple of little scares, but ultimately a well-deserved victory, and nice just to find ourselves in the hat for the next round in a competition that, you know, we could do reasonably well in. So I was pleased with how it went, and I don't think at this stage in the season we can really read too much into, you know, individual performances and things like that. So I was ultimately happy with how it all panned out, and I don't think if you were a Burton fan you could be disappointed to lose. It was their big day out, no disrespect, but you know, we did a job and we did it well.
Did it surprise you? Just, I suppose, two things really. Number one, how much possession we had throughout the game, and secondly, just how little threat they offered even at 2-0 down.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think with regards to their threat, I just think that, you know, it would appear that teams struggle to get the ball off us, to be quite honest, at the moment. And whilst we're not the most creative, it does obviously tire teams out. So I think playing a lower division side, playing the way that we are playing, and obviously I'm sure if we broke down our possession and the number of touches, we'd find that, you know, a lot of it is in our third, or certainly in our half, just because of the way that we're playing out from the back. So I don't think the possession surprises me too much. I mean, I suppose the fact that they were at home, you would maybe have expected a little bit more. And like you say, I suppose when they're 2-0 down, that ultimately they haven't got anything to lose. So you would have expected a little bit more attacking intent. But I just think we were controlling the game. So I don't think it was for lack of trying. I just think we're probably a little bit better than we actually look at the moment. I think, you know, we can pass the ball around very nicely. We can hold the ball. And against a team that's, you know, in the division below us, it's always going to be a challenge for them to get hold of that and actually make use of it, particularly when our defence is so well drilled.
Two good goals. First one, obviously, Ian Atchoo. Just about as close a certainty in sport that he was going to get on the goal scoring sheet against Burton. Very, very nice flick. Rather surprising score, I suppose, for the second goal. A really nice finish from Wilf Ndidi, which wouldn't have done his confidence any harm at all.
No. And obviously his confidence is then shattered by getting dropped for the next game. But look, Ian Atchoo, like, a nice early goal. It was a lovely flick. I mean, it doesn't matter who you're playing against. That's just a striker's instinct, isn't it? So, you know, it's nice to know that as long as we can hang on to him, we have got someone that's, you know, got that about them. And I thought the run and the lay back and Wilf's finish opening up his right foot to side foot it into the top corner was classy. And then obviously after that, you know, we didn't need to do any more. You know, the game was won, like you've alluded to, Burton off with no threat. So, you know, two good goals, comfortable victory, into the hat, happy days, another reasonably favourable draw, I would suggest. It's just, you know, it'd be nice to have a home game, but, you know, again, it's an opportunity to progress and find ourselves playing, you know, hopefully pitting our wits against one of the Premier League teams. I was going to say bigger teams, but, you know, with the teams in the Premier League at the moment, I'm not going to say that. I mean, we might draw Luton. So, you know, it was positive.
Yeah, you've alluded to a favourable draw. Tranmere away, of course, in the second round. And I suppose that just kind of opens things up a little bit, and you start to get to that point. This is a tournament that we've got a good record in. Yep. Even with Brendan, I mean, you think back to a couple of quarterfinal defeats, you think back to somehow managing to miss out on a trip to Wembley, yeah, when Aston Villa knocked us out, which is still pretty painful. Yep. But it is one of these tournaments, isn't it, where obviously teams tend not to play their strongest 11, and you just start to wonder if it's one of these tournaments, we could just, I'm not suggesting for one second that we're going to win it or probably even get to the last four, but maybe could just squeeze through the back door and find ourselves on a half-decent cup run.
Yeah, there's absolutely no reason to think we can't do that. I mean, we're clearly I'm pretty sure that we are a decent side. And when we click into gear, I think we're going to look a lot better. As you've alluded to, the Premier League sides, or the majority of them, play significantly weakened sides. And to be honest, even the ones that are struggling in the Premier League quite often play a second string outfit. So, you know, a home game against a Premier League side not playing their best side, you know, assuming Maresca does play our best 11 or near to it, I don't see any reason why we can't go on a good run. And, you know, if we can, we've got to get past Tranmere first, of course, but, you know, there'll be other teams that, you know, a favourable draw, you know, home times it ties if we do play against some Premier League sides. You know, it doesn't take long to find yourself in the quarterfinals, does it? So it really is an opportunity that, you know, just to sort of hopefully pit our wits at some point against the teams that we're hoping we're going to be back playing again next year.
Yeah, absolutely. And time to move on to the Huddersfield game, because as much as I think Burton was very comfortable, I'll give my views on it in a minute. Well, what were your views on the Huddersfield game? And just a disclaimer here, listeners, we are not unduly negative fans. Obviously, we are absolutely thrilled that Leicester City have got off to a winning start. But I think by the same token, there are plenty of questions. I'm just wondering what you made of the performance, Norm.
Right. I'm going to concentrate on the positives initially. So I think whilst I fully expected us to beat Huddersfield, and I thought we'd probably beat them a little easier than we did, you know, they're big and strong. And so, do you know what the positive there for me was? You know, we have stood up to them. So we've not caved in, we've not been bullied, and, you know, we all know what happened. You know, we all know that we got the result in the end. So I'm not entirely sure there's going to be loads and loads of teams that go and trounce Huddersfield at their place. So I think that was a really good thing. I think we are riding our luck. I mean, they had a, I know, obviously Pratt had missed an opportunity, but, you know, they had an excellent chance. Not as easy as it looked, you know, ball coming in and trying to catch it on the half volley. But, you know, they had a great chance to take the lead. They didn't. So, yeah, we are riding our luck a little bit. But, you know, in games like that, Killer, that's kind of what we need. And, you know, we are, whilst we didn't play hugely well, I mean, I thought the defence, I thought Vestergaard, I mean, goodness me, you know, we've been negative on him. I thought Vestergaard and Fast played, except particularly Fast played, you know, well as a pair. I thought that we had having a huge amount of possession again. I think it becomes inevitable that you do end up wearing teams down. If you look at Man City, and goodness me, listeners, I'm not comparing us to them, but we are trying to play in a similar way. And, you know, the number of games that, particularly when they were starting to get really good, that, you know, teams kind of lived with them for a while, and then just, if it was nil-nil or level with 20, 30 minutes to go, that they'd end up going on to win the game just because the other team's concentration goes, or they just can't quite live with it. And I kind of think that that's going to happen a little bit this season. You know, a fortuitous goal, maybe their keeper just lost concentration shortly, you know, for that brief amount of time. So three wins in a week, not the best performances, Killer, but it's still three wins. It feels like we're in second gear and we've still got three wins. Yeah. It's points in the bag. There's only one other team in the division that's got a 100% record like us. And I'm sure that as time goes by, the ethos that Maresca's tried to implement will get better and better. We've obviously, you know, subject to league approval, we've just signed Casado on a, sorry, not Casado, I wish. Apologies. Cesare Casady, however you pronounce it. We've got the guy from Chelsea on loan. I think he'll make an attacking difference, because that, to me, feels like where we're missing. I was hoping Pratt would be a bit more influential. He didn't have the best of games. So if we can convert our possession, which is solid and decent, into being a bit faster with it and creating some chances, then I think that we're going to, you know, I've got no doubt we'll be okay. But at the moment, it's all just a bit huffy and puffy, not brilliant to watch. But, you know, it's 6 points and through to the next round. Now, I know you're going to want to say something on this, Killer, but just before you do, I'm just got a question for you. Ooh. In each of the last three championship seasons, what has happened to the team that Huddersfield played at home first?
I'm going to say I know for a fact they played Burnley at home last season, first game. So I'm going to say went on to win the league.
That is correct. Mm. So this is the fourth season. I mean, what a statistic that'll be at the end of the season. What are the, you know, a question for some other podcasters in the championship next year? What's happened to the team that played Huddersfield? Huddersfield played at home for the last four seasons. They went on and win the championship. So look, it all augurs well.
Yeah, it certainly does, and we shouldn't lose sight of that. Great start to not particularly convincing performances, but again, I think the thing to remember about the Huddersfield game, and I know it looked like we lacked firepower. I thought some really disappointing performances. You mentioned Dennis Pratt. I thought Ian Atchou was off it. Yeah. I thought Marcel didn't offer a great deal, but we're away from home. 69% possession is absolutely massive. 13 attempts on goal is not to be sniffed at. I suppose the odd thing about the game, in a lot of ways, there was just as much a talking point about what was going on off the pitch as there was on it. And that is mainly down to the fact that he named two sub-goalkeepers. And I think he denied it in the press that there was anything untoward. I thought it was the most sledgehammer obvious thing in the world. But let's just quickly go through those missing, because we've got Christiansen, Suter, Samari, Castagna and Daka. simply not chosen at all.
No, and I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to work out that there's probably something going on in the background, you know, whether their heads have been turned. I mean, certainly Castagna, I think we know, wants to move on. It's pretty clear that he's not so keen on Suter himself. I say pretty clear. The fact that he's playing Vestergaard instead means that, and by all accounts, sounds like he's looking for another centre-half as well.
Yeah.
You know, it would suggest that he's not necessarily part of his plans. I think there's been a bit of interest in Daka. So, you know, actually, I suppose, playing, you know, we've got Iheanacho starting, we've got the two wingers anyway, and he's got Vardy on the bench, then he can almost leave Daka out by making a point to the board, for instance, to say, you know, look, we do need some reinforcements, because it is slightly bizarre playing a two goalies on the bench. And I also found it fairly bizarre that and I can't pronounce the guy's name, Solacek, that, you know, two players have come in, and Iversen, and I mean, I can understand Walks. I suspect he really is going to be on his way, but, you know, Iversen's not even got a start in a game where our first choice hasn't been able to play. So it's all a little bit strange. So I think it's just pointing towards the fact that there's going to be a number of people on their way. And I suppose just to sort of go on from last week's, the most expensive bench in Championship history, it's probably the most expensive like group of players that haven't even been selected for the bench in Championship history. I mean, none of them would be misplaced in the first team, would they?
No, they wouldn't. Here's a worry, though, and we're talking hypothetically, but we also know how difficult it appears to be to get deals done in 2023, and really for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
So of the ones that we've mentioned, and again, I'll give you the list again. Christensen, I'm not convinced Christensen's on his way out, actually.
No.
Because he's got a knock. But certainly the rest, you've got Suter, Samari, Castagna, Daka, and there is absolute certainty that Darren Ward is absolutely surplus to requirements.
Yeah.
Okay. Did I say Darren?
You did, but yeah. Darren, Danny, you know.
Yeah, he's completely forgetting.
We know.
So Alex Smith comes back, and et cetera, et cetera. But let's just imagine, hypothetically, we only get rid of two of those players. So let's just say, hypothetically, Daka and Suter gone. Okay.
Yep.
Or let's say Castagna and Suter gone. Okay. At what point then do you turn round to who's left? Like Daka, Samari's had nothing to do with anything. I don't even know Samari's been even training with the first team. But at what point, Norm, do you as a manager turn round and say, right, you're not going anywhere, you're here for the season, you've got to get on with it? Or do you just literally wilderness those players, get shot at them?
Well, I think as long as there's space in the squad, you'd have to and want to keep them. And the players we've discussed. I mean, Danny, I hate picking on Danny Ward. It's not his fault. I mean, Danny Ward aside, who frankly, if he's not sold, I'd almost be inclined to do the honourable thing and say, look, mate, we're going to cancel your contract and let you go and find somewhere else for free. Just get him off the wage bill, because I'm sure he's costing us a few quid. But, you know, the rest could do a job for us. So I suppose it'd be more about trying to keep them, if no one's come in for them, making sure their head's in the right place and that they're ready to play. Because I know we've been a bit down on Daka, but I think he can do a job at this level. I think Samari, you know, he was playing a lot at the end of last season. I thought he'd improved a little bit. And whilst a physical league is probably not the best for him, you know, surely to goodness, he's someone that, you know, would be one of the top five midfielders in the Championship if he was given an opportunity. So it's all, yeah, I really don't know the answer to that. I would hope that they'd just be integrated into the squad where possible. But obviously the ideal is that there are going to be teams that would want to come in and take them off our hands, even if it's just for a loan, you know, even if it's just for the season, just to get them off the wage bill, just to try and give us a little bit of space. But yeah, it'd be very interesting to see.
If we retain Christensen, and I've just got this horrible feeling with Samari, he's nobody's going to come in for it. Is there an argument to say, regardless of who Enzo brings in, is there an argument to say that that is a team which is way too top heavy with fullbacks and holding midfielders? Yeah. For Samari, I think you'd put Winks in the category of holding midfielder. Ndidi, arguably can't play anywhere else. Hamza Choudhury, I mean, four guys for one position?
Yeah, no, it is too much. And I think, without a doubt, so we've got to look at offloading someone. And I suspect behind the scenes there's something, you know, something going on and some interest that we're probably not hearing about. I think the fullbacks are obviously are also a bit of a concern, or wing backs, or however you want to describe them, because we have got a plethora of them. But I suppose the issue is that certainly, you know, Justin's coming back from injury again. We all know that Ricardo can be a bit injury prone. I suspect Castagna will go. You know, Christensen's out injured. I suppose there's an argument to say, with the fact that you've got, you know, two fullback stroke wingback positions, depending on how we end up playing, then there's an argument to keep up, I suppose, a few more of those players, particularly players that can potentially play in the middle, like doing the Callum Doyle role at the moment. I don't see, you know, we just discussed that Castagna could have done that. I'm sure Christensen could probably do that. I'm pretty sure James Justin could do that. So in many ways, a lot of them might well be almost interchangeable across the back four or the back five, which gives us more of an argument to keep them. But I'm pretty sure, like we've alluded to, he's very keen on getting rid of players like Suter, who's fairly, it appears to me, isn't in his plans, unless he has got a little knock or something like that. But I mean, fair play to Maresca. If he's making these difficult decisions and leaving players like this out, at least he's setting his stall out, and at least the players know where they stand, so their agents can be actively looking for somewhere else to go.
Yeah, I quite agree. And like you say, courage and conviction in terms of very clear about what he wants, how he wants his team to play. You've got to love that, haven't you? You have got to love that. I think the worst thing for any footballer is to just have that nebulous view from a coach. You don't really know what's expected of you. He's made it very, very clear. This is how he wants to set his stall. If you can't play football, and that's all 11 players, if you can't play with your feet, you ain't playing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think you've hit the nail on the head there. It's just important that the players know that, and they know where they stand. And then it's a lot harder to have any animosity or annoyance about the situation if you know that it's not actually you, it's the system that's just not working for you. So, you know, fair play.
Just a quick moan, by the way. We don't do loads of moaning on this show, he says, having moaned a couple of times already. But head scratch moment for me, Norm, at the weekend. Huddersfield, a team that had been relegated from the Premier League. Obviously, now they are parachute payment less, so they're going to get nothing. And by all accounts, obviously, just scratching around the accounts a little bit. So with that in mind, Huddersfield, here's a challenge. You've got that large away end, of which you give away fans half of it. And the other half, you put your home fans in. Okay?
Yes.
Okay, and I get that bit. Here's the bit I don't get, Norm. The opposite end, there is an entire lower tier which is covered over with advertising.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah. And you take Leicester City, we know would have comfortably filled out that away end, 4,500, 5,000. And don't just think it's Leicester City that would have done. Leeds United, Middlesbrough, Jeff Wednesday. I suspect Norwich would have given it a good tilt. Your local teams, your Lancashire teams, Preston, Blackburn. What on earth are they doing?
The only thing I can possibly think of is they think that by allowing too many away fans in would just be a significant advantage for the away team. and therefore they'd rather lose out on a bit of revenue to prevent that happening. But yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, we all know that a football ground is much better when it's full. And, you know, at King Power, if we weren't selling out, I would much rather go to a game with 4,000 or 5,000 away fans and a full house creating a great atmosphere for football, rather than, you know, leaving, letting them have 2,000 tickets and having 28,000 there. Yeah. So, yeah, it's bizarre. It is completely bizarre.
And must be costing them £60,000-£70,000 a home match. I've got to say it's a head scratch. I don't get it at all. And it's not done them any favours, is it? I mean, if they've given us 5,000, by the way, we still walk away and win 1-0 anyway.
And I think, I wonder how many times we'll see that in the season. You know, yeah. it's you know, I suspect there'll be a lot of teams that, yeah, at the beginning of the season, a lot of teams, you know, have larger attendances. Well, the hope and expectations there, that disappears. So do the crowd. But will teams, you know, the bigger, you know, will away ends still be given limited tickets rather than thinking, well, look, here's an opportunity. We're going to be mid-table. Let's let them have 6,000-7,000. Yeah. Because it'd be great to get a load more fans into the ground.
Excellent stuff. Okay, bit of a harsh question, but I do like things like this. Enzo Maresco, he's got his school report.
Yeah.
Norm, he's got his school report after 3 games.
Okay, so...
What are you giving him?
Well, I remember my old school reports, and they used to have...
God help us.
Well, they were mainly most excellent killer. But I think they'd have things like effort and a kind of attainment. And if we just switch I think attainment, obviously, had been like the 90%. I think effort, I think the team are putting in a shift. I'd put them in the 80s for that. I think that if we add a third option there, which would be something like, I suppose what they deserve, you know, how much they deserve, or the skill, let's say a skill factor, I'd have that about 50%. So I think my overall summary would be, you know, a good start, but really could do much, much better, and really ought to be giving setting an example to the other students as to how things ought to be done. But that's not quite where we are yet.
Not quite. I get the feeling that I think we'll be better after transfer deadline day. I think we'll be better when we've got this turmoil. We've got way too many footballers at this football club who think they're leaving. The problem is we're still paying them until they're off the books. I would imagine for Leicester City, and not often we say this, because generally speaking, our transfer day activities are absolutely negligible. I think it's going to be worth watching this time, Norm. I suspect we are going to be a busy club. And I suspect what will happen is the balance sheets guys will be saying, if you can get shot of Samari, Castagna and Daka, then you can bring in 3 loan players. I suspect it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when we're looking at things and considering, you know, the players you've just mentioned there, you know, given that they are not currently part of the setup, if we were to sell them, then ultimately we're not going to miss them. It would be creating a sum of money that we can use for players that Maresco does want. So it would be good for the players that would be moved on, and it would be good for us as a club. So I just, you know, I hope that the Rudkin and the everyone are working very, very hard behind the scenes, identifying the players that we are hoping to get deals done, and, you know, having chats with those clubs in the event that we are able to move some of these bigger names on for what would be reasonably, not sizable transfer fees, but, you know, for a championship club as we are now, they will be pretty decent and certainly enable us to make some very positive changes with regards to the incomings.
Yeah, and I suspect as well, the way that he's gone about his football, he's already looks like he's quite a charismatic manager.
Yeah.
There's no coincidence that Chelsea, his old club, Manchester City, are prepared to loan out players. I suspect we haven't seen the last of the loan players.
No.
So we will watch this space. Not something I'm going to be doing too regularly, listeners, but just wanted a quick recap on the three Leicester City superstars, if we can call them that, that left the club. One of the reasons I wanted to do this is, I don't know what your view is on it, Norm, but I get the feeling that they're three good guys. They gave pretty much 100% for the football club. All three of them have got excellent reputations, and all three of them left with their heads held high. Really pleased to see Harvey Barnes come on for Newcastle against Aston Villa. He must have literally been licking his lips knowing that Aston Villa back line was getting higher and higher, and he got more and more space. And by goodness, did he make the most of that, because for 30 minutes, he was nothing short of sensational.
Yeah, I like the fact that those players have gone on to and stayed in the Premier League where they deserve to be. I'm sad they're not at the club. I'm sad that we went down, but Barnes deserves it. He's been great for Leicester. I'm really pleased. He got the best move of a lot of them, obviously. He was superb, and I was just very disappointed to find that he hadn't started the game, to be quite honest. But yeah, delighted for him to come on, like you say, licking his lips, and an assist and a goal in your cameos. You know, it's not a bad way to introduce yourself to the Newcastle faithful in the first Premier League game of the season for them. I thought he was, you know, he was fantastic, you know, absolutely fantastic. And I love Maddison. I think he's always been honest. I think he's a nice, I think, well, he appears to be a nice lad. I think he's had bad press in the past. He's got his head screwed on. And again, delighted to see that he's got, sad for him this week that Kane left. I mean, I hope that he kind of knew that was a very, very, very strong possibility when he signed for Spurs, because, you know, I can't believe with Liverpool getting, like, losing midfielders left, right and centre that there wasn't a bidding war for him. It's bizarre, but, you know, to get two assists, he'll make the difference to that Spurs team. So, you know, well done to him. Tielemans a little different, but, you know, I'm not annoyed with him, but I feel that he's been a bit more inconsistent over the last couple of seasons. But it's like you say, not something we're going to dwell on, but it's nice to see them do well, because we've kind of made them the players that they are. So,
yeah,
you know, really, really quite happy with that.
And of course, we've made the butt end of 60 million quid out of them. So let's not moan at a time when the club desperately needed 60 million quid. So it's worked both ways, isn't it?
I mean, just on that though, there's a little bit of annoyance with regards to, not so much Barnes, but the particularly Maddison, when you've got Lavia looking like he's going for 50 million, Casado's 115 million. You know, Ward-Prowse went for 30 million, which is much more reasonable and obviously a bit more of an indication that a player, you know, going down in the Championship is or potentially can be worth a little less when you're a bit older. But the one that's getting me is Onana at Everton, you know, being talked at 60 million. I find it all a little bit frustrating, but I'll tell you something, not half as frustrating as seeing Bournemouth sign Alex Scott from Bristol City, West Ham picking up Ward-Prowse, you know, going back in for Maguire. It's particularly this Bournemouth thing for me, like signing players for 25 million like Alex Scott, who I think is a great player. It's so frustrating that we're in the Championship, because, you know, this guy's gone to, again, no disrespect, Bournemouth, he's gone to Bournemouth. Who might well get relegated this season. It's all just adds that little bitter pill for the fact that we didn't quite manage to stay up, because we could be having Ward-Prowse to replace Maddison. You know, we could have been having Alex Scott come in to replace, you know, he's more of an attacking midfielder anyway. See where I'm coming from? We're missing out on some really good players just because we are where we are, and it's really annoying.
You just get the feeling, though, don't you, that somehow we would have not bought those players and bought a load of guys you've never heard of, some of which would have been brilliant superstars and some of which would have been rubbish. But I'll tell you something with regards to the English Premier League, and I'm really sorry if I'm going to show any disrespect to the two clubs involved. but you cannot see Luton or Sheffield United between them getting 40 points. It is almost a cast iron certainty, I think, that those two clubs are down and really down and hopelessly set adrift. Now, I suppose what we're saying is, had we beaten Everton at home, had we still been in the Premier League, I have no doubt we would have lost at least Tielemans and Maddison. You can't help thinking, even with a little bit of minor adjustment, that fourth bottom this year, I mean, there's got to be clubs like Notts Forest. I mean, they've just got to be laughing, haven't they, at how easy it's going to be to stay in the Prem this season.
Yeah. I mean, there's probably about seven or eight clubs fighting for one place, isn't there?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, fighting to avoid...
To avoid one place.
One place. Yeah. Without a doubt. So it's... You're spot on. I mean, that's a really good thing. Maybe like I think you're right. 40 points between them would be is a really good challenge, because I wonder whether Luton could genuinely challenge Derby for that lowest ever Premier League total, because they are just awful, aren't they? So
I've got to say I watched quite a fair bit of the Sheffield United Crystal Palace game. I mean, Palace without Wilfried Zaha. I mean, I know it was only 1-0. It could have been 3 or 4, mate. It was one of those where there was two or three disallowed goals. Sheffield United didn't have a kick. And this was at home, sun's out.
Yeah.
First game of the season. Sometimes you get that promotion momentum, don't you? Playing against the Palace team where there's not been loads of investment. And it was absolutely woeful. I hope I'm wrong, Blades fans, because you're a good set. But I'm afraid a long, long winter is ahead.
My dear killer, while we're on the Premier League, if ever there has been a day or an evening where you're just pleased that we are no longer involved in VAR, last night's utter disgrace at Man United was... it's made my blood boil. I mean... John Moss having to apologise immediately after the game. It is just yet another example of how something that should be able to be so, so simple is not being used at all correctly, and the incompetence of the officials to come up with a decision and try and justify that it wasn't a clear and obvious error. Thank you for being in the Championship for this one season, because we do not need VAR if it's going to be like that.
No, absolutely. And I've got to say, Norm, and I've said this to quite a few pals, and I'm not just saying this because we're not in the Premier League, because I'm an honest guy. If I was really missing it, I'd say, you know, blimey, look at the fixtures. Where's the Man City's? Where Man United? I just look at all the transfer activity that's going on. I look at VAR, I look at the disallowed goals at the weekend.
Yep.
It just feels like one horrible circus that I have no doubt we're heading back to it. But for one season, it just almost feels like we've been invited to an alternative party, okay? And the booze isn't quite on point, but actually you're having a better laugh.
Yeah, absolutely. A party that you want to be at rather than one that you feel you should be at.
Yeah.
That's a great, very good. And I know Tim's always, I'm not going to be unpleasant to Tim when he's not with us.
Go ahead.
But, you know, he's been saying it's hard to get excited about the Championship. And he said it on air. It isn't. I mean, how can we, you know, it's Cardiff, it's not Man City at the weekend. But goodness me, I'm thoroughly looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to every game we play, because, you know, when was the last time we won 3 games in a week?
Yeah.
Apart from last week, I can't remember. So it's going to be a really, really great, exciting, and I'm sure heartbreaking and topsy turvy at times season. But it's the ride. We support the club. It's magic.
Talking to a Cardiff fan on Friday night, by the way, you perhaps won't be surprised to know that they have very quickly sold out their allocation down at the King Power. It's very, very much seen by them as being the game of the season. We just have to understand as well, for pretty much everybody visiting the King Power Stadium, I think that is going to be the case. It's certainly going to be the case the longer that Leeds carry on in the mire. How do you see the Cardiff game going, Norm?
Well, they had a good result away at Leeds in the first game. Obviously, they've lost to QPR at home.
Which was a shocking result, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, they're going to want to prove something to their fans. And I suppose, you've asked me how I see the game going. I see it probably being a bit like the Coventry game. I don't think Cardiff are as good as Coventry, but I suspect they're going to come and set up nicely. They're going to try and stop us, well, as they always do, try and stop us scoring. And we'll probably know that, you know, they are going to get a chance. You know, they are going to get a chance on the break, and they're going to get some set pieces where they could cause us some problems. So I would imagine they'll be looking for keep it tight, go for a bit of a smash and grab, because we have ridden our luck. And if, you know, at some point, even against weaker sides, that a team will score against us, and we might not score enough to win the game. So I think it would be a bit of a cage, you know, almost like a cagey affair. I think, as always, we'll have a lot of the ball, we'll probe and we'll press, and hopefully we can get an early goal, which will help us relax and obviously therefore bring Cardiff out of their shells a bit. The longer the game goes with us having lots of possession without creating the chances or without scoring, it's just going to get the crowd going to start to perhaps get a bit nervous, and it could play into Cardiff's hands. But you know, ultimately, I'm fairly confident that we're going to get the right result. But I don't think it's going to be one of these, you know, blow them away kind of games. It's, you know, control possession, win the game reasonably comfortably, and then move on to the next one. But like you said, it's a big game for Cardiff, as most teams that come to King Power are going to look at them and think, we've got nothing to lose coming here. Let's just go and enjoy it and see what we can do. And that, you know, that could make it difficult for us.
Well, the more games we win, the more the reputation is going to grow, of course. I mean, if we were in the bottom three now, after a while, it just pops and dissolves, doesn't it? But the longer we go unbeaten, the more that we will be seen as probably the best team that's ever been in the Championship, who are now playing like the best team that have ever been in the Championship. Somebody this season is going to beat Leicester City at home 1-0. That is, I think, an absolute certainty. Let's just hope it isn't Cardiff. Norm, over to the predictor table.
Well, obviously, since we've been in the Championship, that both yourself and Tim have started copying me at predicting Leicester to win every week, which is also a little bit disappointing when we have won every week. But none of us so far in the competition have got the correct score. So after the first week, we all had a point each. We all predicted Leicester to beat Huddersfield. None of us predicted 1-0. So we're all currently sat on 2 points. Tim has very kindly provided me with his prediction for the Leicester City versus Cardiff, and he's gone for a comfortable yet uninspiring 3-1 victory for the Foxes. What do you fancy, Killer?
Yeah, I've got to say, I don't see three goals. I think you've absolutely nailed it, mate. I think they're going to sit deep. We're going to have lots of possession, and I think a single goal will win it. 1-0 to the Foxes.
Great, because I'm going to go for 2-0 for the Foxes. I think we'll score two goals later on in the game. So a tense affair, but one that ultimately we will come out victorious. And I'm sure with 2-0, 1-0 and 3-1 as the predictors, maybe this is the week that someone gets it bang on, Killer.
Yeah, absolutely. Unless, of course, it's a draw.
In which case,
yeah, it's going to happen. You just have to understand it is going to happen. Right, Norm, final thoughts?
Well, I'll tell you my final thoughts. When we're talking about, you said that just a minute ago, Killer, some team is going to come to Leicester and win 1-0. One of the thoughts I've been having genuinely since we beat Huddersfield is, I wonder if we could win all 46 games. So my final thought is, I wonder how far away from that magical 138 points we're going to end up. And I thought, you know what? We're not going to get there. But I think my final thought is, we are going to break the Reading's record for the most points in the Championship this season.
Yeah, okay, all right. Well, that's very possible. My final thoughts, dead simple. Listeners, we are in the results business. Three games in, three wins. Thank you very much for listening. Tim will be back next week. I will be sat next to Norm, cuddling up, lapping Trumpwell's IPA whilst Tim hosts, and we look forward to broadcasting to you then. Have a great week, Foxes fans. Up the Blues.
Thanks for listening, everyone. If you enjoyed the Leicester City Pubcast, please subscribe and tell everyone about it. If you hated the Leicester City Pubcast, please keep it to yourselves. See you next week.